The Nagging. Naturalist. It's the Nagging Naturalist Podcast.
Hey everyone, and welcome to the Nagging Naturalist Podcast. This is a podcast that discusses animals, how they benefit our society and our planet, the threats that they face, and what we can do to protect them. I'm your host, Kristen, and I am a naturalist by trade. And this is actually a part two of a takeover where I have been allowing wildlife experts to take over my podcast and discuss some of the issues that they basically have on their minds and things that they think are important that sometimes have to do with animals and sometimes don't. In this particular case, I had Rhiannon Curtin take over my podcast. She is a cervidologist, aka a deer scientist, and she's been discussing the erasure of Black people in history, especially in particular jobs like hunting, ranching, being cowboys, things like that, but also the modern narrative of Black people not belonging in outdoor spaces. The vast majority of our discussion happened in part one of her takeover. In this one, we sort of pick up back where we left off, and she does continue to kind of reinforce some of the message that she had in part one. But at this point, honestly, most of this is us kind of wrapping up our dialogue. And I do want to give a little bit of preface because I feel like I should have done this for the last episode as people were listening. But to give some context as to why she and I are so goofy through all of this is we did a recording in the morning, but both of us were exhausted that morning. She even made herself coffee when I first hopped on to record. She asked me if she could step away and make a cup of coffee. So we're both super tired, and before we even started recording, we had been talking for like 2.5 hours before we even started recording the podcast, and we had been very silly and goofy about a lot of things. And so you will sometimes hear me giggling or her giggling in the background of one of us talking, and sometimes it may not come at the right time. It may seem like we're laughing at the wrong time, but that's because there was a delay between when we received each other's audio. So sometimes it seems like we might even be laughing at something at an inappropriate time, and it may have just been a delay in that arriving, and the quality of our internet and the extension of the delay changed constantly throughout the discussion. So hopefully that helps give a little bit of context and maybe people will understand why we were just so tired and done by the end of this. So before we jump back in, I just wanted to give a little bit of context. So at the end of the last episode, she made the statement about it's important for people to realize that Black people don't want to be excluded from outdoor spaces, despite the narrative that they have always been in these outdoor spaces. And just because people don't see it or hear about it doesn't mean that it didn't happen. And it's a really important part of making these spaces more inclusive again. So that's what we're going to jump back into, is her continuing that conversation of why that narrative is wrong and it excludes Black people from these spaces and these careers, even though they historically have had a presence there.
You know, even when you're talking about Black students in STEM, this sort of representation and the people who say, oh, well, you know, like Black people just don't want to be ecologists because they don't like the outdoors. Part of that idea is because you don't see Black people represented in media about the outdoors. Also, all sorts of other barriers to becoming a mammalogist or an ecologist as a Black student because of this socioeconomic history, because people don't feel safe doing fieldwork outdoors. I had a conversation with an organization recently, who shall remain unnamed. But they were talking and talking and talking about diversity, and for years people have said, like, why are you not doing more for diversity? Other societies are. And they have said, yeah, we're going to work on it. And even this year, people had to push them to make a statement about Black Lives Matter. And then they finally come out with this email saying, oh, yes, we as a society want to support this and support more diversity in our profession and recruiting people into our profession. And like, when push comes to shove, they don't actually support it. And I ended up getting really frustrated with said society. And I said, you know, it would be nice if when I go to Montana to work at a nature reserve, my family are not concerned about me being a Black woman in Montana. And I am bold enough and stubborn enough that I will go to these places anyway. But when you're talking about trying to recruit more diversity in our profession, there are lots of people who don't want to go to the middle of nowhere, Montana, because they're concerned about these things. And, you know, highlighting the history of Black ranchers in Montana might make people feel more comfortable going to Montana to do fieldwork. Because often these places that people say, oh, well, like, Black people don't do that, are like rural backwaters, which is fine. But if you did actually highlight the history of people who have lived in these places and say, look, Black people did live here at one point, you know, people might feel less uncomfortable about going there.
I wonder if they think about the irony of the fact that they are dictating to Black people what they do and don't like. And also, even when Black people aren't being stereotyped about not wanting to be outdoors, the next issue becomes, even if they are being invited into these spaces, are they actually being welcomed into these spaces? Like, using this as an example, I read a thing recently where a professor who was given housing by her university had the cops called on her when she had someone visit her, and the cops demanded that she prove that she lived there, and they just made it this whole ordeal for her, and she proved that she lived there, and yet the cops continued to harass her. And I know that that's a thing with, like, park rangers too. Sometimes park rangers are also provided housing while they're working in parks. So what does that mean for Black people who want to be park rangers if they're living in this housing, but the neighbors decide to call the cops on them because they don't think that they belong there? So it's not just enough to not say Black people don't belong in outdoor spaces. We also need to make sure that when Black people are participating in outdoor activities like hunting, being cowboys, ranching, trapping, being park rangers, hiking, like the whole slew of things, that we're also making sure that they're safe there too and not harassing them for existing out in nature.
Mm-hmm. And it's, I told this story in my PBS article, but I went to Oregon. Also, when I went to Oregon, I wasn't aware of the huge anti-Black history that Oregon has as a state. I only recently learned about that. But I was mountain biking and I got lost. And it's the desert, by the way, in Bend. It's the high desert. It's hot as hell. And I was there in July, even worse. And I saw a road. And I was like, oh, look, a road that probably leads to the main road, which would lead back to town. Sweet. And then there was like a couple houses and a couple building sites. And I was like, oh, I'll just dash across the building site to get to the road to make it back to the main road instead of having to backtrack all this way. And then I saw a sign, which was literally like on a post in front of a bush. And it said, no trespassing. And I was like, and I stood there for 10 minutes and I was like, if I cross this building site, and there was a man sat in his truck on the building site. And I was like, if I cross this building site, am I going to be considered suspicious because I'm black and I'm in Oregon? And I was like, no, I'll just do it. Because I was like, I don't want to go all the way back where I just came from. So I crossed the building site. But that could have ended badly. And like Ahmaud Arbery was killed for doing something very similar to what I did. And like the reality is that really I was just lucky. I'm not special. I'm not extra smart. I was lucky. And you shouldn't have to be lucky to be able to be a black person in the outdoors and come out of it alive, whether you're hunting, whether you're hiking, whether you're biking. You shouldn't have to worry about being alive and like coming home. It's just ridiculous. Or doing field work as a black person. I read on Twitter recently, someone was saying like their student asked about field safety and they were in some like rural part of Utah, I think. And he said, oh yeah, like it's safe. It's like, you know, not a concern. And his black student was like, will I be safe doing field work as a black person in rural Utah? You know, it's an extra layer of something we have to think about. And we talk about how biodiversity is so important to having functioning ecosystems and resilient ecosystems. And I would say that having a diversity of people in conservation organizations and hunting organizations and all these other things is equally important, because how do you get the diversity of perspectives you need to do the best work you can do if your staff are all homogenous? But then you have to deal with all these other issues that we've been talking about. So it's very interesting to be at this kind of
crossroads.
Yeah, I want to say turning point in how we in the conservation and like wildlife management communities deal with race and like interact with race. And that extends, you know, not just to people who are scientifically trained, but to naturalists, to mountain bikers, because all of those things that have traditionally been considered non-consumptive use of wildlife still impact wildlife. And so when we're talking to all of those communities, are those communities diverse? You know, who are we talking to? Why are those communities not diverse? Like all of that stuff is really important. And I think that for so long, people have just been like, oh, we don't want to talk about race because it's too much of a sticky subject. Or where this particular society are concerned, they say, you know, well, we don't want to splinter the membership. We don't want to talk about race at the cost of alienating the members who don't believe in people having human rights, which is a really terrible stance to take, by the way. Really effing terrible.
Not a hill to die on at all.
I'm sure you can guess who this society is, too. Wouldn't be very hard. But, you know, and that's the thing is like, are we as hunting organizations, as conservationists, as parks staff, are we going to continue to ignore these issues of race because we don't want to make people upset who are already in the membership? Like, what is the cost? What is the cost that is, like, you know, acceptable to you to do the right thing? maybe doing the right thing comes at the cost of pissing off some people who are members.
And not just that, but some of their membership is probably people who support this. So, and especially if they're trying to look at it like economically, like, oh, well, our bottom line is how much money are we going to make? If they think that investing more in their members who are opposed to racial justice and, you know, equality, those aren't great people to even have in your membership, let alone to be the part of your membership that you defend. I mean, we know that the future is going to continue to become more diverse. In the U.S., the population of white people is becoming stagnant. Like, our population is not really growing that much. Most of the communities that are growing in the U.S. are people of color. And so we're looking at a future where we are going to continue to become a much more diverse nation as far as what races people identify as. And a lot of people who are not white are very invested in racial justice issues for obvious reasons.
Right. And if they're part of the membership already, they might possibly leave you because you suck.
Yeah, that's the other, like, who's going to leave? Are you going to let the people who are more on that, you know, racist side of the spectrum stay? Or do you want to keep your communities who want to fight race and oppression? Like, who do you want to keep? Who's more important? I think that's not a hard thing to address.
When you're thinking about the longevity of the organization, the answer becomes real obvious. And I guess to finish on the main point of the takeover, like, according to Smithsonian Magazine, 1 in 4 cowboys was black. You know, it's not a small part of history in America. It's a huge part of history in America. And when we're talking about that intersection of the patriotic American, as we, like, imagine them, who they are and what they believe in, and then you think about 1 in 4 cowboys in America was black. When you talk about the pioneers of the American West and all that nonsense, 1 in 4 cowboys was black, you know? And I just think it's ridiculous that this narrative has been taken over by these racist, small-minded people who are, you know, pretending this history doesn't exist. And environmental justice is racial justice. They're the same thing. You can't separate those two things. And to pretend that you can is just ridiculous. And probably why we've been failing for so long in achieving our goals as conservation organizations. And, you know, it's recognizing Indigenous knowledge as legitimate scientific knowledge. And the whole thing is just, I'm so stoked to be able to talk about, you know, Black hunters as part of Black Mammalogist Week to start to change these narratives or rewrite these narratives to recognize the place of the Black community in conservation and hunting and ranching and how we get our food. And often Black and brown bodies are the people who end up being endangered and exploited in our current intensive farming systems. And it's ridiculous, but also if we had better rights, then maybe that wouldn't be the case. And if we recognized the integral role of Black and brown bodies in our producing our food, then it would be a more just system for everybody, you know, the animals, the people. So I think, it's all part of one big conversation, but I will send you some links about Black cowboys and Black hunters after this. But as a country music listener, people are like, wait, you like country music, but you're Black. And I'm like, oh, this idea of like black people being homogenous or the same is dumb as hell.
The monolithic black person that only does certain things and nothing
right
else.
And it's also part of that is like this idea that people have that like all black people are the same, or as a black person you can like speak for every black person in North America is ridiculous. When people say, oh, but Morgan Freeman doesn't believe in racism, as if Morgan Freeman as a rich man.
Or Terry Crews.
Oh, God. Not him. Ugh, I hate him so much.
I know it
has been so awful because he was such a great supporter of, like, the Me Too movement and supporting survivors. And then when BLM starts, or at least when the protests started this year, it's just like,
nope.
So disappointing.
Well, and that's the problem, though, is that for the majority to continue to think, you know, black people are a monolithic group, one black person is able to speak for all black people, then you have this situation where Terry Crews comes out and says something and people say, oh, well, you know, black people are whinging about nothing because Terry Crews says he doesn't believe in it. Yeah, sure. Like, all these thousands of black people are whinging about nothing because one black person said it doesn't matter. And I think also, for me, just touched my microphone to my knee. But for me, like the intersection, again, between, you know, country music and popular narratives in country music and the idea that like, oh, black people don't listen to country or drive pickup trucks or, you know, it's like so absurd. And we have seen some rejection of that with Lil Nas. As much as I really hate that song, I hate it so much. Detest. But
Darius Rucker kind of country girl.
Yeah, I just, you know, I love Darius. I'm not. Yeah. I like Billy Ray too. I just don't like that song.
See,
I like Darius Rucker more when he was in Hootie and the Blowfish because I am more on the rock spectrum of things. But I do enjoy like some types of country, particularly bluegrass.
Right.
But one thing I find really kind of funny about Darius Rucker is I have heard some people say that like he doesn't stir the pot when it comes to like race and social justice. But I remember Hootie and the Blowfish, there was a song he had where he sang about his relationship with this woman, and it's basically a song about his experience being a black man in a relationship with this woman. So it was race-based. So there's all these people saying that he doesn't discuss issues of being black, and yet he sang an entire song about it when he was in Hootie and the Blowfish. So it's more of people just aren't, you know, listening to black people.
Right. And, you know, all of these things are intertwined. Hunting, country music, ranching. The Venn diagram between those three groups of people is probably got a lot of overlap. And so, you know, it all is connected. And I am stoked to see more. More recognition, you know, of black histories in these spaces and the Yeehaw agenda and, you know, like Compton Cowboys. And in Texas, there's loads of black people who own horses, you know, like in Houston, there's a huge segment of the horse owning community who are black. So this continued kind of blinkering of popular narratives is not only harmful, but also like ignoring the very reality that we live in.
Don't forget that people don't see race anymore. And, you know, it's almost kind of ironic too, because a lot of these people who claim to be colorblind don't realize that that whole narrative is its own erasure of black people and people of color. ignoring a person's skin color doesn't miraculously make their problems just go away.
Right. And also, ignoring racial differences does not... I unfortunately have Facebook friends who are in the whole, like, why do people keep talking about race? It's just divisive. We're all the same anyway. And I'm like, the reality is, whether you wholeheartedly believe that or not, the system is rigged against Black and brown bodies, and ignoring the problem is not going to fix it. If you actually genuinely believe that we're all the same, then you should recognize the problems that we face because of our race and help us to rectify them so that we can all be treated the way that you like to pretend that we're all treated. Because it ain't the same, even if you think that. But you're wrong. You're wrong.
You're wrong.
Oh, it's so frustrating. I just don't even engage anymore. I just scroll past. The most hilarious thing, I just checked my phone because I had it turned off. But I looked at Twitter, and Tyke, he is one of the co-organizers for Black Mammologist Week. He was also involved in Black Birders Week. He just shared this article in Medium, and the Medium article is titled, Why Black People Don't Go Camping. And a quote from the author is, Black people do not have a natural aversion to camping or the great outdoors. We have a natural aversion to racism and abuse. Which I think is
the sentence.
Yeah, it's, you know, like everything that we've talked about today is that it's not that Black people don't like the outdoors.
And this goes back to the whole idea you had of Black people not being monoliths. Like, there are definitely Black people who probably don't enjoy the outdoors, who don't want to go camping, and that's fine. They can live their life however they want. But the default assumption that they never want to be outdoors or camping is really harmful because, as we've mentioned and just hammered away at constantly, it really makes them feel unwelcome in those spaces and sometimes even puts them in danger. And it can be difficult for me as an educator because I want all people to feel welcome in nature. I want people outside connecting with nature, loving it, and wanting to preserve and protect it. And if I have a group of people, and especially, you know, Black people are not a small minority in the U.S., they're a large growing minority. You know, if these people are being made to feel unwelcome in these spaces, I can't help them or encourage them to come into this space because I have the same appearance as a person who would tell them that they don't belong in nature. And so even though I am in these educational spaces trying to encourage Black children and Black families to come out into nature and connect with it, especially in the urban spaces that I'm teaching in, it can be very difficult because for everything that I might say this one time as an individual, they are constantly bombarded by media and, you know, potentially neighbors or friends or whatever who contradict everything I say, whether intentionally or unintentionally. And it makes it really difficult for me to try to tell them to, you know, come out to a park and explore these spaces safely and make those connections with nature and wildlife.
Follow the rules, y'all. Do not feed deer.
Oh, yeah.
Please, thank you. All those other things.
Yeah, I remember when, I wasn't quite on Twitter yet, but I remember when there was the whole issue with the person who put the baby bison in their truck. And I was just like, why? Why did anybody think that was ever a good idea? There's literally signs everywhere saying, do not approach, do not touch, do not feed the wildlife, especially the bison. When you drive into the Yellowstone, they hand you a flyer about not engaging the wildlife. It's everywhere. You can't ignore it. Why on earth did you do this?
That, yeah, it's just, don't touch things. Somebody, I did a recent podcast, it hasn't been released yet, but it was all about deer. People got to send in their questions about deer. And someone said, what shall I, like, feed the deer if I want them to come to my yard? And I'm like, no. I was like, I'm not even answering this question. Do not feed wildlife. It is illegal. Like, there is no, like, what do I feed the deer? What do, just leave them alone. Appreciate them from afar. It's all you should do.
Part of that came from that, well, the Brother Nature thing where the guy was feeding the deer. all of us were so upset about that. Like, oh my God, do not do this. This is literally how you kill animals. That instant gratification for a 30-second video clip for you is a death sentence to that deer. Do not do these things ever, please.
I hate Brother Nature. I hate him. There is no other good explanation for the way I feel about Brother Nature.
Yeah, we do not stand Brother Nature on this podcast at all.
I know he is a black man, but I do not support him. Unverify him now, please, because he is annoying. God, I hate that guy.
And this goes back to your statement about black people not being monoliths. Just because he does this one particular thing, which is feed wildlife, and that is incredibly irresponsible, you know, it doesn't make it right. It doesn't make it okay. And a lot of people in the community, especially those who participated in things like Black AF and STEM and all these weeks we've had that have highlighted Black excellence in STEM fields, especially wildlife biology fields, a lot of people came out and said, dude, this isn't cool. This is wrong. Like, people should not be following his example, and I know multiple people have requested that he take the video down and stop encouraging people to, you know, feed the wildlife.
Yeah, and it's like, it's that thing, right? It's like, you don't want to tear down another black person who's in the public eye, but he's still doing the wrong thing. He's still doing the wrong thing.
Yep.
Stop it.
And of course, that's such a tricky thing to do right now in some of these discussions is because we're having so many discussions surrounding race, it can be so tricky to criticize a person who is black about their behavior because, like you said, you don't want to tear anybody down. We're trying to be very supportive of the community right now, but at the same time, we can't simply ignore people who do things that are wrong. And so it's one of those things where it's important to make sure that people understand that it is fine to want to support and uplift the voices of black people, but that doesn't mean that you have to support and uplift their voices when they are saying or doing things that are wrong or that you, at least that we consider wrong.
Yeah, and I'm sure Brother Nature has now blocked me. Oh, he hasn't. I'm shook. I tweeted at him one day and I was like, stop this. Oh, he has his Gmail listed right there though. Huh? But yeah, I think it just goes back to you. Treating black people like a monolith is not the way to solve problems or to excuse your racist views.
I'm definitely gonna have to break up this interview.
My back hurts.
We've been going.
My back hurts. Oh, your butt hurts.
Yeah.
What most people don't realize is we started talking at like 11 o'clock this morning and it's nearing 3 o'clock right now. So we've been going at this for like 4 hours, even though we've only been recording for like an hour and a half.
I want pizza. Where do I find pizza?
Oh my gosh, yes. Oh, that sounds excellent. That sounds like a great time to say that we'll probably, I mean, if there's anything else you feel like adding, you are more than welcome to, but I think that we're getting to a point to where we're basically coming back to the same theme of black representation matters, reminding people of black history matters, and, you know, people shouldn't be treated as monoliths, and that we need to be way better about diversity and inclusion in our dialogues and how we welcome black people in the spaces to ensure that they are safe and thriving in the same spaces that non-black people are.
Yes, for sure. And I really appreciate that both of us have made lots of hilarious voices throughout this process. It's been very funny.
Yeah, I'm sure a lot of my regular listeners are going to wonder what happened to the customer service voice that I usually use for my podcast. But, I mean, with these interviews, it changes everything because it's different when you talk to a person versus simply, like, talking into a mic, like, talking into the void. And it's so much more fun, and especially since we have webcams on, it's so much easier to make faces and be silly because we can see each other. And, you know, it feels more natural. It's easier to be myself in these interviews where I can kind of go off of other people's reactions and reflect my feelings more versus like when I'm talking to a mic and I can't force myself to be expressive as easily as some people do. It's something I need to practice doing, but yeah, this has definitely been fun and just so weird in the best possible way.
It's so hard as well. And like people often, you know, say like, oh, you should be professional on Twitter because otherwise it'll hurt your career if you're like weird on social media. But I'm like, it's social media. You pay me to do a job. Like my job is separate from my social media. Like that, they're not the same thing. Unless me being on social media is impacting me doing my job, then
Well, I think that we need to give us a break because now we've gone past lunchtime. And are heading into the later afternoon. And
no, what am I gonna eat?
Well, apparently pizza.
There's no pizza.
I mean, I know a pizza place I can go to.
I really want pizza. Thank you so much, Kristen. This was really fun. I hope the listeners get something out of it. I feel like I was just chatting about nonsense the entire time, but
why don't you go ahead and plug Black Momologist Week, especially the day where you are going to be talking about hunters and ranchers and cowboys.
Okay, Friday will be very topical to this talk. We will be having a panel with Black hunters talking about their experiences in the hunting community. And what they would like to see in the hunting community going forward, which I am very excited for. That has been my main contribution to the week thus far.
Thank you so much for your time. It was
thank you.
Like I'm really excited to learn more. And once you send me some of those links, I'll definitely post some of those links alongside the podcast to make sure that people can go and read some of the things like more Black history, learn about these ranchers and you know, hunters that really helped kind of build our modern civilizations.
Yeah, for sure. I will send you those links post pizza.
Post pizza. I love it.
Go find pizza first.
And so concludes Rhiannon's takeover. So, like I said, I mean, it really was a focus on just trying to really reinforce that message of making sure that when we speak or when we present certain messages about being outdoors and being in nature, that we aren't excluding Black people and other communities of color, and making sure that we don't just invite them into these spaces, but making sure that they are actually welcome in a safe way so that they can enjoy it the same way anybody else does. It was wonderful getting to talk with Rhiannon and really learning her perspectives on these things and hearing about these stories that aren't being told to help really enrich the lives of Black people and the history that they have in these countries. So, some follow-up, like I said in the last episode, there were some characters that she really mentioned that were integral to a lot of this narrative. One was John Ware, and the other was Joseph Lewis. And then there was the website blackpast.org. If you go to the original episode, I give all that information, so I'm not going to be redundant in repeating it. But I wanted to make sure that her message was really reinforced, because that was the whole point of her takeover, was making sure that she could share these stories and these messages
that she feels are important to the conservation conversation. Boy, that was a tongue twister. And make sure people understand the issue so that they can work towards fixing it. So for those of us who are trying to be better allies to the Black community, it's really important that when we are having discussions or supporting business and organizations, that we are evaluating things like how they discuss Black people in spaces and how they represent them in those spaces as well, and making sure that we're doing our best to be very welcoming and that we are not contributing to these negative stereotypes and narratives that are very exclusionary.
That's a wrap for this. Thank you all so much for listening in on this. And for any questions or comments, you can feel free to reach out to me at my email, thenaturalist@thenaggingnaturalist.com. And you can check out my website, thenaggingnaturalist.com. And on social media, you can find me under The Nagging Naturalist on Facebook and Instagram, as well as on Twitter under the handle @nag_naturalist. You can also help out my podcast by leaving reviews on either Apple Podcasts or podchaser.com to help kind of spread the word and give me a little bit more visibility. If you love learning about wildlife and don't want to wait for another episode, check out some of these other really awesome wildlife podcasts. All Creatures Podcast, Crittercast, The Wildlife, Just the Zoo of Us, Animals to the Max, Varmints, Amazing Wildlife Podcast, The Casual Birder, The What Are You Podcast, The Songbirding Podcast, and Strange Animals Podcast, which are all safe for work. There's also Keeper Chat, which is an amazing podcast, but it is definitely not safe for work. I'm also trying to be more supportive of other non-wildlife podcasts, or at least ones that may not necessarily focus on wildlife. So here are some really great science podcasts that you can check out that discuss either other types of specific sciences or just focus on science in general. Petri Dish, Planthropology, Bald Scientist, Dear Grad Student, Better Than Human, Curiosity Cake, Mad Scientist, What Are You Going to Do With That? Papa PhD, Breaking Math, Curiosity Killed the Rat, That's What I Call Science, and The Scientist Podcast, and that's scientist with two T's at the end. Some of these podcasts are and aren't safe for work, so be sure to double check if that's something of concern. I can definitely tell you Petri Dish is never safe for work unless you have a really awesome job, if I'm being honest. But I'm also on a non-wildlife podcast called The Legend of Portalcast, which discuss the world of Avatar: The Last and Airbender and Legend of Korra. So you can check that out as well if that's of interest to you. Anyway, I'll be back on Friday with more from Rhiannon's Takeover. Thanks so much for listening.